I think it's a good time to begin our study for March 8th, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 12:58 hours Eastern Standard Time, just an hour after noon, and Ward Green with you again today for our study, Chapter 8, Paragraph 3 of the Crucible article. To say that the Bible is not literally true, or is rather a collection of stories based on folklore, is to disregard the family history angle of the Bible account, leaving our sensibilities blunted and our need for roots unsatisfied. This is why I find it necessary to attempt to identify the biblical character of Joseph with the characters of Egypt. I believe it desirable, but not necessary, that it be done in faith, using the resources of the modern age, so as not to miss out on seeing what proof might inevitably be found. It is for the purpose of recreating familiar sensibilities. Because of prejudice, many people have tried to exclude our Jewish heritage from historical records, and while they may have kept faithful family records written over generations, even the Jews themselves concealed their identity at times, submitting their own will to the politics of the situation. This we have documented in Harold Hildetan saying, quote, "The Catholic Saint William of Jalon is, according to Athol Bloomer, a grandson of Machir Todros ben Judah Zakkai, the Jewish king of Septimania, appointed by Charlemagne in 768, that would be the Common Era, as Jewish exilarch, in brackets Machir Todros is Machir Theodoric I, end bracket. Saint William is the son of Nehemiah Ha Machiri, who is also known as Theodoric." In the article Joseph, that was the end of the quote. In the article Joseph, I reveal of Joseph's family, quote, a new quote, in the Bible, when Rachel gave birth to Joseph, she stated, "God has taken away my reproach," end quote. Prior to his birth, we're still in the major quote, she had been childless while Jacob's other wife had produced a number of sons. Rachel had given her maidservant to produce children for Jacob when she had thought she was barren, and so she said, quote, "Jehovah is adding another son to me," end quote. Jacob loved Joseph very much, for he had loved Rachel, and she was for a time unable to give him a child after their marriage. Bethuel, the grandfather of Rachel, the father of her father Laban, was the father of Jacob's mother, Rebekah. Jacob loved Rachel, so Rebekah and Laban were brother and sister and brother. Jacob loved Rachel, and Joseph was her son. You'll find some of these things in Genesis 25 and 20. Compare Genesis 28 and 5. Jacob loved Rachel and Joseph was her son, so this made Joseph especially favored in Jacob's eyes. Since this chapter is about Joseph, we're interested in him. Jacob loved Joseph more than all of his other sons because he was the son of his old age. Genesis 37 and 3. So Jacob had someone make a special garment just for Joseph, and that even became a Broadway musical called The Coat of Many Colors or something like that. I think the name of the Broadway musical was, it was called Joseph's Technicolored Raincoat, right? Something like that. Yeah. The Broadway musical that was based on the story of Joseph in the Bible. It was based on the Bible story. We know the story of Joseph is a very popular story even today. That's all for today's study, little ones. For our scripture, though, we have, I'd like to do the Ward Green version of Proverbs 14, 29, and 30. The one slow to anger, little children, is wise of a kind, but praised folly is by the hasty of mind. The life of the soul is a heart that is sound. In envious bones is where rot will be found. And that's our daily proverb for today. Two proverbs, or two verses, 14, 29, and 30. Right. The one slow to anger is wise of a kind, but praised folly is by the hasty of mind. The life of the soul is a heart that is sound. In envious bones is where rot will be found. Well, the Bible is a timeless book. The thing we need to realize, the timeless principles of the Bible never fail. They always hold true. They've been tested over thousands of years. That's something to keep in mind. Also, 1 Chronicles chapter 27 now, our reading from 1 Chronicles, and we're approaching the end of the book of 1 Chronicles now. We're not there yet, but I think it's 30 chapters. Yeah, 29 chapters in the book of 1 Chronicles. As for the sons of Israel, by their number, the heads of the paternal houses and the chiefs of the thousands and of the hundreds and their officers that were ministering to the king in every matter of the divisions of those that came in and that went out month by month for all the months of the year. Each division was 24,000. Over the first division of the first month, there was Jashobeam, the son of Zabdiel, and in his division there were 24,000. Some of the sons of Perez, the head of all the chiefs of the service groups, were for the first month. And over the division of the second month, there was Dodai, the Ahohite, with his division, and Mikloth was the leader, and in his division there were 24,000. The chief of the third service group for the third month was Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, the chief priest, and his division there were, in his division, there were 24,000. This Benaiah was a mighty man of the 30 and over the 30, and over his division there was Amizabad, his son. The fourth for the fourth month was Asahel, Joab's brother, and Zebediah, his son after him, and in his division there were 24,000. The fifth chief for the fifth month was Shamhuth, the Israelite, and in his division there were 24,000. The sixth for the sixth month was Ira, the son of Ikesh, the Tekoite, and in his division there were 24,000. The seventh for the seventh month was Helez, the Pelonite, of the sons of Ephraim, and in his division there were 24,000. The eighth for the eighth month was Sibokai, the Hushathite of the Zerahites, and in his division there were 24,000. The ninth for the ninth month was Abiezer, the Anathothite of the Benjaminites, and in his division there were 24,000. The tenth for the tenth month was Meharai, the Netophathite of the Zerahites, and in his division there were 24,000. The eleventh for the eleventh month was Benaiah, the Pirathonite of the sons of Ephraim, and in his division there were 24,000. The twelfth for the twelfth month was Heldai, the Netophathite of Othniel, and in his division there were 24,000. And over the tribes of Israel of the Reubenites, Eliezer, the son of Zikri, was leader of the Simeonites, Shephatiah, the son of Maacah of Levi, or Levi, Hashabiah, the son of Kemuel, of Aaron Zadok, of Judah, Elihu, one of David's brothers, of Issachar, Omri, the son of Michael, that is, of Zebulun, Ishmael, the son of Obadiah, of Naphtali, Jeremoth, the son of Azrael, of the sons of Ephraim, Hoshea, the son of Azaziah, one of the forefathers of, the paternal forefather of Joshua, son of Nun, I believe, is this Hoshea, the son of, Hoshea, yeah, right, because he's long before the time of David. This is not the forefather of Joshua. This is a descendant, possibly, of Joshua, but we don't know that, actually. But we don't, I was thinking backwards. I had the times reversed where I was thinking that we were looking at the ancestors of Joshua, but no. This is the Book of Chronicles, which often does talk about much earlier times, but it also talks about the time of David here. So of the sons of Ephraim, Hoshea, the son of Azaziah, of the half-tribe of Manasseh, Joel, the son of Pedaiah. No relation to the Joel of the Book of Joel, who lived much later than the time of David, even hundreds of years later in the time of Hezekiah, or even later, which would be 700 BCE instead of 1,000. Of the half tribe of Manasseh in Gilead, Iddo, the son of Zechariah, of Benjamin, Jaasiel, the son of Abner, of Dan, Azrael, the son of Jeroham. These were the princes of the tribes of Israel. So there was a half tribe of Manasseh in Canaan and also in Gilead, on the other side of the Jordan. These were the princes of the tribes of Israel. And David did not take the number of those from 20 years of age and under, because Jehovah had promised to make Israel as many as the stars of the heavens. Joab, the son of Zeruiah, had himself started to take the count, but he did not finish. And for this there came to be indignation against Israel, and the number did not come up into the account of the affairs of the days of King David. And over the treasures of the king there was Asmaveth, the son of Adiel. And over the treasures in the field, in the cities, and in the villages, and in the towers, there was Jonathan, the son of Uzziah. And over the doers of work in the field, for the cultivation of the soil, there was Ezri, the son of Kelub. And over the vineyards, there was Shimei, the Ramathite. And over that which was in the vineyards for the wine supplies, there was Zabdi, the Shifmite. And over the olive groves and the sycamore trees that were in the Shephelah, there was Baal-Hanan, the Gederite. And over the oil supplies, there was Joash. And over the herds that were grazing in Sharon, there was Shitrei, the Sharonite. And over the herds in the low plains, there was Shaphat, the son of Adlai. And over the camels, there was Obil, the Ishmaelite. And over the she-asses, there was Jediah, the Meronathite. And over the flocks, there was Jaziz, the Hagrite. All these were the chiefs of the goods that belonged to King David. And Jonathan, David's nephew, was a counselor, a man of understanding, he being also a secretary. And Jehiel, the son of Hachmoni, was with the king's sons. And Ahithophel was a counselor of the king. And Hushai the Archite was the king's companion. And after Ahithophel, there were Jehoiada, the son of Benaiah. I almost said Benaiah. I think it's more like Benaiah. And Abiathar. The accented vowel is the long vowel. And Joab was chief of the army of the king. And that's the end of 1 Chronicles chapter 27. A fairly self-explanatory chapter, where we saw there were 12 divisions and not 24, as with some of the other groups that we've seen previously, such as the priests, for example, and even the musicians. But we had 12 groups here, talked about 12 divisions of 24,000. That's a lot of people, but these are just the heads of the paternal houses and the chiefs of the thousands, apparently, and of the hundreds and their officers that were ministering. There were a lot of people ministering to the king. According to 1 Chronicles 27, Joel chapter 2, now we see an interesting comment from Adam Clark. At the beginning of his commentary for the book of Joel, he does talk about the effect that locusts do have on farmland and how they're so destructive. And, of course, we know that because there was a plague of locusts also in Egypt at the time of Moses and the Exodus, just prior to the Exodus, when the plagues were sent upon the Egyptians by Yahweh. Yahweh sent plagues upon the Egyptians through Aaron and Moses, and one of them was the plague of locusts, of course, and that was, like all the plagues, it was devastating upon the Egyptian people, made them cry out, and eventually it forced the Egyptians into submission, or caused them to choose to release Israel and let them go free. Blow a horn in Zion, O men, and shout a war cry in my holy mountain. Let all the inhabitants of the land get agitated, for the day of Yahweh is coming, for it is near. It is a day of darkness and gloominess, a day of clouds and thick gloom, like light of dawn spread out upon the mountains. There is a people numerous and mighty. One like it has not been made to exist from the indefinite past, and after it there will be none again to the years of generation after generation. Ahead of it a fire has devoured, and behind it a flame consumes, like the Garden of Eden. The land is ahead of it, but behind it is a desolate waste. Wilderness, and there has also proved to be nothing thereof escaping. Its appearance is like the appearance of horses, and like steeds is the way they keep running. As with the sound of chariots on the tops of the mountains, they keep skipping about. As with the sound of a flaming fire that is devouring stubble, it is like a mighty people drawn up in battle order. Because of it, peoples will be in severe pains. As for all faces, they will certainly collect a glow of excitement. Like powerful men they run. Like men of war they go up a wall, and they go each one in his own ways. They do not alter their paths, and another one they do not shove. As an able-bodied man, in his course they keep going, and should some fall, even among the missiles, the others do not break off course. Into the city they rush, on the wall they run, on the houses they go up, through the windows they go in like the thief. Before it the land has become agitated, the heavens have rocked, sun and moon themselves have become dark, and the very stars have withdrawn their brightness, and Yahweh himself will certainly give forth his voice before his military force, for his camp is very numerous, for he who is carrying out his word is mighty, for the day of Yahweh is great and very fear-inspiring, and who can hold up under it? And now also the utterance of Yahweh is, come back to me with all your hearts, and with fasting, and with weeping, and with wailing, and rip apart your hearts, and not your garments, and come back to Yahweh, your God, for he is gracious and merciful, slow to anger, and abundant in loving kindness. And he will certainly feel regret on account of the calamity. Who is there knowing whether he will turn back and actually feel regret, and let remain after it a blessing, a grain offering, and a drink offering for Yahweh, your God? Blow a horn in Zion, O men. Sanctify a time of fasting. call together a solemn assembly, gather the people together, sanctify a congregation, collect the old men together, gather children and those sucking the breasts together. Let the bridegroom go forth from his interior room, and the bride from her nuptial chamber. Between the porch and the altar, let the priests, the ministers of Yahweh, weep and say, "Do feel sorry, O Yahweh, for your people, and do not make your inheritance a reproach for nations to rule over them. Why should they say among the peoples, 'Where is their God?' And Yahweh will be zealous for his land and will show compassion upon his people. And Yahweh will answer and say to his people, 'Here I am sending to you the grain and the new wine and the oil, and you people will certainly be satisfied with it. And I shall not make you any more a reproach among the nations. And the northerner I shall put far away from upon you, and I shall actually disperse him to a waterless land and desolated waste, with his face to the eastern sea and his rear section to the western sea. And the stink from him will certainly ascend, and the stench from him will keep ascending, for he will actually do a great thing in what he does.'" That is, what Yahweh does will be a great thing. "Do not be fearful, O ground. Be joyful and rejoice, for Yahweh will actually do a great thing in what he does. Do not be fearful, you beasts of the open field, for the pasture grounds of the wilderness will certainly grow green. For the tree will actually give its fruitage. The fig tree and the vine must give their vital energy. And you, sons of Zion, will be joyful." No, I should say, let's read that again, verse 23. "And you, sons of Zion, be joyful and rejoice in Jehovah your God, in Yahweh your God. And you, sons of Zion, be joyful and rejoice in Yahweh your God, for he will be bound to give you the autumn rain in right measure, and he will bring down upon you people a downpour, autumn rain and spring rain, as at the first. And the thrashing floors must be full of cleansed grain, and the press vats must overflow with new wine and oil. And I will make compensation to you for the years that the locust, the creeping, unwinged locust, and the cockroach and the caterpillar have eaten, my great military force that I have sent among you." You see, Yahweh considers the caterpillar and the locust and all these creeping things that destroy the crops as his army. They're the army of Yahweh. He sends them to do his bidding, if that's to destroy the crops of his people because they have done wrong, then that's what he does. "And you will certainly eating and become satisfied, and you will be bound to praise the name of Yahweh your God, who has done with you so wonderfully, and my people will not be ashamed to time indefinite. And you people will have to know that I am in the midst of Israel, and that I am Yahweh your God, and there is no other. And my people will not be ashamed to time indefinite. And after that it must occur that I shall pour out my spirit on every sort of flesh." You notice it says after that. "And your sons and your daughters will certainly prophesy." So if this refers to the outpouring of Holy Spirit in verse 28 that occurred in the time, chapter 2 of the book of Acts, in the time of the year CE, 30 CE that is, the year CE 30, CE is the way we say that. In the BCE years we say BCE and then the number. Typically that's the convention that should be followed, but people follow their own conventions. But 30 CE was the outpouring of the Holy Spirit. If this prophecy of Joel refers to that, then what was the plague of locusts that came before it? So it's rather difficult to see this as referring to that, unless there's something we could consider as a plague of locusts prior to that in the time of Jesus. It's not necessary for it to be that way, but as long as we can reconcile that, then this can apply to the outpouring of the Holy Spirit. But also, you know what? It can certainly apply to the outpouring of Spirit in the modern day, after the World War that we call World War I, and because that certainly was destructive, like a military force of locusts is destructive, and this was the World War, called the Great War at the time, and later called World War I. After that, there was an outpouring of spirit upon Jehovah's people. So it certainly can apply to more than just the time of Joel. And maybe also it does apply to the time of Jesus, if we can reconcile whatever difficulties there are. As for your old men, dreams they will dream. As for your young men, visions they will see. And even on the men servants and on the maid servants in those days, I shall pour out my spirit, Yahweh says. And I will give portents in the heavens and on the earth, blood and fire and columns of smoke. The sun itself will be turned into darkness and the moon into blood before the coming of the great and fear-inspiring day of Yahweh. And it must occur that everyone who calls on the name of Yahweh will get away safe. For in Mount Zion and in Jerusalem there will prove to be the escaped ones, just as Yahweh has said. And in among the survivors, whom Yahweh is calling. It's the end of Joel chapter 2. That concludes our Bible reading, little ones, for today. Mr. Clark, in his commentary on the book of Joel, says that Bishop Lowe observes that the style of Joel differs much from that of Hosea. We can't pop that in there. I'll have to do it another way here. Let's see. We want to go here, here, and then here somewhere. Right. Bishop Lowe observes that the style of Joel differs much from that of Hosea, but though of a different kind, is equally poetical. It is elegant, perspicuous, clear, diffusive, and flowing, and at the same time very sublime, nervous, and animated. He displays the whole power of poetic description in the first and second chapters. But at the same time, his fondness for metaphors, comparisons, and allegories. Nor is the connection of his subjects less remarkable than the graces of his diction. It is not to be denied that in some places he is very obscure, which every attentive reader will perceive, especially in the end of his prophecy, which we will not be reading today, of course. There's a plague of locusts which was to devour the land and to be accompanied with severe drought and famine, and in its secondary sense, it denotes the Chaldean invasion. In other words, it denotes that there would be the Chaldeans at some point invading, just as locusts can invade and cause great destruction. And so the Babylonians, who were also called the Chaldeans, they did invade at the time that Judah was invaded by the Chaldeans. The Assyrians, of course, invaded the northern kingdom. And at the time of Joel, evidently that had already occurred. If we're to believe the commentary that we're reading about this, and also the context of Joel, we'll have to review that, actually. Come to think of it, what does Joel chapter 1 say? The day of Yahweh is near. Right. But based on the idea also that Joel himself, the prophet, was of the tribe of Pethuel of the tribe of the tribe of Reuben as the son of Pethuel, and the city of Betharan on the other side of the river in the tribe of Reuben. That would make him of the northern kingdom, not the southern kingdom, which was only Judah and Benjamin. But he prophesied in the kingdom of Judah, it says there. Right after that, Joel prophesied in the kingdom of Judah. And it is the opinion of some critics that he did not appear there till after the removal of the ten tribes and the destruction of the kingdom of Israel. How are we going to learn that he prophesies in the kingdom of Judah if it doesn't mention the name of the king? How do we know? Maybe we'll learn that in chapter 3 when we do that tomorrow. For now, that's just about it for our study, but I want to read this fascinating commentary, which I haven't even read myself yet entirely. Both senses must be admitted for the interpretation of the locusts. It's both a literal locust invasion, perhaps, anyway, why not? That was fairly common in those days, as Mr. Clark pointed out in his commentary. It wasn't uncommon for locusts and drought and famine to occur, or for locusts to invade and then be followed by severe drought and famine. That was not uncommon in that part of the world, in Israel. The contexture, both, okay, both senses, that is the locusts and also the army of the Chaldeans, must be admitted, for some of the expressions will apply only to the dearth by insects, others to the desolation by war. The contexture of both is beautiful and well conducted. In this chapter, etc., he goes on, but we should stop because we will run out of time if I get carried away. That's it. We have enjoyed our study, have we not, little children? I hope you have. I've enjoyed being with you, and that's the end of the study for today. It is March 8th, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 1330 hours Eastern Standard Time, 2 days from daylight time. But that will be on the 10th. And I love you very much. In my behalf, this is Liv Dusty, and this is Cassie saying bye for now. Wait a minute, I'm under 33 minutes. I'm going to wait a little while here. There we go, 33 minutes. Bye for now.